I wish I could be there to see Sanagar's face, Robert said. I hope he'll have the wit to send them to someone else. We ought to keep them running all day.
Those boys, Ned asked him. Lannisters? Robert nodded, wiping tears from his eyes.
Cousins, sons of Lord Tywin's brother. One of the dead ones, or perhaps the live one, now that I come to think of it. I don't recall. My wife comes from a very large family, Ned.
A very ambitious family, Ned thought. He had nothing against the squires, but it troubled him to see Robert surrounded by the Queen's kin, waking and sleeping. The Lannister appetite for offices and honours seemed to know no bounds. The talk is you and the Queen had angry words last night. The mirth curdled on Robert's face.
The woman tried to forbid me to fight in the melee. She's sulking in the castle now, damn her. Your sister would never shame me like that.
You never knew Lyanna as I did, Robert, Ned told him. You saw her beauty, but not the iron underneath. She would have told you that you have no business in the melee.
You too, the king frowned. You're a sour man, Stark. Too long in the north. All the juices have frozen inside you. Well, mine are still running.
He slapped his chest to prove it. You are the king, Ned reminded him.
I sit on the damned iron seat where I must. Does that mean I don't have the same hungers as other men? A bit of wine now and again? A girl squealing in bed? The feel of oars between my legs? Seven hells, Ned! I want to hit someone!
Sir Barristan Selmy spoke up. Your Grace, he said, it is not seemly that the king should ride into the melee. It would not be a fair contest. Who would dare strike you? Robert seemed honestly taken aback.
Why, all of them, damn it, if they can. And the last man left standing
will be you, Ned finished. He saw at once that Selmy had hit the mark. The dangers of the melee were only a savour to Robert, but this touched on his pride. Sir Barristan is right. There's not a man in the Seven Kingdoms who would dare risk your displeasure by hurting you. The king rose to his feet, his face flushed.
Are you telling me those prancing cravens will let me win?
For a certainty, Ned said, and Sir Barristan Selmy bowed his head in silent accord. For a moment, Robert was so angry he could not speak. He strode across the tent, whirled, strode back, his face dark and angry. He snatched up his breastplate from the ground and threw it at Barristan Selmy in a wordless fury. Selmy dodged.
Get out, the king said then, coldly. Get out, before I kill you.
Sir Barristan left quickly. Ned was about to follow when the king called out again.
Not you, Ned.
Ned turned back. Robert took up his horn again, filled it with beer from a barrel in the corner, and thrust it at Ned.
Drink, he said brusquely. I've no thirst. Drink! Your king commands it.
Ned took the horn and drank. The beer was black and thick, so strong it stung the eyes. Robert sat down again.
Damn you, Ned Stark. You and John Aaron. I loved you both. What have you done to me? You were the one should have been king, you or John.
You had the better claim, Your Grace.
I told you to drink, not to argue. You made me king. You could at least have the courtesy to listen when I talk, damn you. Look at me, Ned. Look at what kinging has done to me. God's too fat for me armor. How did it ever come to this? Robert, drink and stay quiet. The king is talking. I swear to you, I was never so alive as when I was winning this throne, or so dead as now that I've won it. And Cersei, I've John Aaron to thank for her. I had no wish to marry after Lyanna was taken from me, but John said the realm needed an heir. Cersei Lannister would be a good match, he told me. She would bind Lord Tywin to me, should Viserys Targaryen ever try to win back his father's throne.
The king shook his head.
I love that old man, I swear it, but now I think he was a bigger fool than Moonboy. Oh, Circe's is lovely to look at, truly, but cold. Oh, the way she guards her cunt. You'd think she'd had all the gold of Casterly Rock between her legs. Here, give me that beer, if you won't drink it. He took the horn, upended it, belched, wiped his mouth. I'm sorry for your girl, Ned, truly. About the wolf, I mean. My son was lying. I'll stake my soul on that. My son... Yes. You love your children, don't you?
With all my heart, Ned said.
Let me tell you a secret, Ned. More than once, I've dreamed of giving up the crown. Take a ship for the free cities, with my horse and my hammer, spend my time warring and whoring. That's what I was made for. The sellsword king. How the singers would love me. You know what stops me? The thought of Joffrey on the throne, with Cersei standing behind him, whispering in his ear. My son! How could I have made a son like that, Ned?
He's only a boy, Ned said awkwardly. He had small liking for Prince Joffrey, but he could hear the pain in Robert's voice. Have you forgotten how wild you were at his age?
It would not trouble me if the boy was wild, Ned. You don't know him as I do.
He sighed and shook his head.
Ah, perhaps you're right. John despaired of me often enough, yet I grew into a good king.
Robert looked at Ned and scowled at his silence.
You might speak up and agree now, you know.
Your Grace, Ned began carefully. Robert slapped Ned on the back.
Say I'm a better king than Ares, and be done with it. You never could lie for love nor honour, Ned Stark. I'm still young, and now that you're here with me, things will be different. We'll make this a reign to sing of, and damn the Lannisters to seven hells. I smell bacon. Who do you think our champion will be today? Have you seen Mace Tyrell's boy? The Knight of Flowers, they call him. Now there's a son any man would be proud to own to. Last tourney, he dumped the Kingslayer on his golden rump. You ought to have seen the look on Cersei's face. I laughed till my sides hurt. Renly says he has this sister, a maid of 14. Ooh, lovely as a dawn.
They broke their fast on black bread and boiled goose eggs, and fish fried up with onions and bacon, at a trestle table by the river's edge. The king's melancholy melted away with the morning mist, and before long Robert was eating an orange and waxing fond about a morning at the Eyrie when they had been boys.
I'd given John a barrel of oranges, remember? Only the things had gone rotten, so I flung mine across the table and hit Dax right on the nose. You remember Redford's pock-faced squire? He tossed one back at me, and before John could so much as fart, there were oranges flying across the high hall in every direction.
He laughed uproariously, and even Ned smiled, remembering. This was a boy he'd grown up with, he thought. This was the Robert Baratheon he'd known and loved. If he could prove that the Lannisters were behind the attack on Bran, prove that they had murdered John Arryn, this man would listen. Then Cersei would fall, and the Kingslayer with her. And if Lord Tywin dared to rouse the West, Robert would smash him as he had smashed Rhaegar Targaryen on the Trident. He could see it all so clearly. That breakfast tasted better than anything Eddard Stark had eaten in a long time. And afterward, his smile came easier and more often, until it was time for the tournament to resume. Ned walked with the king to the jousting field. He had promised to watch the final tilts with Sansa. Septa Mordain was ill today, and his daughter was determined not to miss the end of the jousting. As he saw Robert to his place, he noted that Cersei Lannister had chosen not to appear. The place beside the king was empty. That, too, gave Ned cause to hope. He shouldered his way to where his daughter was seated, and found her as the horns blew for the day's first just. Sansa was so engrossed, she scarcely seemed to notice his arrival. Sandor Clegane was the first rider to appear. He wore an olive-green cloak over his soot-grey armour. That and his hound's head helm were his only concessions to ornament. 100 golden dragons on the Kingslayer, Littlefinger announced loudly as Jaime Lannister entered the lists riding an elegant blood-bay destrier. The horse wore a blanket of gilded ringmail, and Jaime glittered from head to heel. Even his lance was fashioned from the golden wood of the Summer Isles. "Done," Lord Renly shouted back. "The hound has a hungry look about him this morning." "Even hungry dogs know better than to bite the hand that feeds them," Littlefinger called dryly. Sandor Clegane dropped his visor with an audible clang and took up his position. Sir Jaime tossed a kiss to some woman in the commons, gently lowered his visor, and rode to the end of the lists. Both men couched their lances. Ned Stark would have loved nothing so much as to see them both lose, but Sansa was watching it all moist-eyed and eager. The hastily erected gallery trembled as the horses broke into a gallop. The hound leaned forward as he rode, his lance rock-steady. But Jaime shifted his seat deftly in the instant before impact. Clegane's point was turned harmlessly against the golden shield with the lion blazon, while his own hit square. Wood shattered, and the hound reeled, fighting to keep his seat. Sansa gasped. A ragged cheer went up from the commons. "I wonder how I ought to spend your money," Littlefinger called down to Lord Renly. The hound just managed to stay in the saddle. He jerked his mount around hard and rode back to the lists for the second pass. Jaime Lannister tossed down his broken lance and snatched up a fresh one, jesting with his squire. The hound spurred forward at a hard gallop. Lannister rode to meet him. This time, when Jaime shifted his seat, Sandor Clegane shifted with him. Both lances exploded. By the time the splinters had settled, a riderless blood bay was trotting off in search of grass, while Sir Jaime Lannister rolled in the dirt, golden and dented. Sansa said, "I knew the hound would win." Littlefinger overheard. "If you know who's going to win the second match, speak up now, before Lord Renly plucks me clean," he called to her. Ned smiled. "A pity the Emperor's not here with us," Lord Renly said. "I should have won twice as much." Jaime Lannister was back on his feet, but his ornate lion helmet had been twisted around and dented in his fall, and now he could not get it off. The commons were hooting and pointing, the lords and ladies were trying to stifle their chuckles and failing, and over it all, Ned could hear King Robert laughing louder than anyone. Finally, they had to lead the Lion of Lannister off to a blacksmith, blind and stumbling. By then, Sir Gregor Clegane was in position at the head of the lists. He was huge, the biggest man that Eddard Stark had ever seen. Robert Baratheon and his brothers were all big men, as was the Hound, and back at Winterfell there was a simple-minded stable boy named Hodor, who dwarfed them all. But the knight they called the Mountain That Rides would have towered over Hodor. He was well over 7 feet tall, closer to 8, with massive shoulders and arms as thick as the trunks of small trees. His destrier seemed a pony in between his armored legs, and the lance he carried looked as small as a broom handle. Unlike his brother, Sir Gregor did not live at court. He was a solitary man, who seldom left his own lands, but for wars and tourneys. He had been with Lord Tywin when King's Landing fell, a new-made knight of 17 years, even then distinguished by his size and his implacable ferocity. Some said it had been Gregor who dashed the skull of the infant prince Aegon Targaryen against a wall, and whispered that afterwards he had raped the mother, the Dornish princess Elia, before putting her to the sword. These things were not said in Gregor's hearing. Ned Stark could not recall ever speaking to the man, though Gregor had ridden with them during Balon Greyjoy's rebellion, one night among thousands. He watched them with disquiet. Ned seldom put much stock in gossip, but the things said of Sir Gregor were more than ominous. He was soon to be married for the third time, and one heard dark whisperings about the deaths of his first two wives. It was said that his keep was a grim place, where servants disappeared unaccountably, and even the dogs were afraid to enter the hall. And there had been a sister, who had died young under queer circumstances, and the fire that had disfigured his brother, and the hunting accident that had killed their father. Gregor had inherited the keep, the gold, and the family estates. His younger brother, Sandor, had left the same day to take service with the Lannisters as a sworn sword, and it was said that he had never returned, not even to visit. When the Knight of Flowers made his entrance, a murmur ran through the crowd, and he heard Sansa's fervent whisper, "Oh, he's so beautiful!" Sir Loras Tyrell was slender as a reed, dressed in a suit of fabulous silver armour, polished to a blinding sheen, and filigreed with twining black vines and tiny blue forget-me-nots. The commons realized, in the same instant as Ned, that the blue of the flowers came from sapphires. A gasp went up from a thousand throats. Across the boy's shoulders, his cloak hung heavy. It was woven of forget-me-nots, real ones, hundreds of fresh blooms sewn into a heavy woolen cape. His courser was as slim as her rider, a beautiful grey mare, built for speed. Sir Gregor's huge stallion trumpeted as he caught her scent. The boy from High Garden did something with his legs, and his horse pranced sideways, nimble as a dancer. Sansa clutched at his arm. "Father, don't let Sir Gregor hurt him," she said. Ned saw she was wearing the rose that Sir Loras had given her yesterday. Jorry had told him about that as well. "These are tawny lances," he told his daughter. "They make them to splinter on impact, so no one is hurt." Yet he remembered the dead boy in the cart, with his cloak of crescent moons, and the words were raw in his throat. Sir Gregor was having trouble controlling his horse. The stallion was screaming and pawing the ground, shaking his head. The mountain kicked at the animal savagely with an armoured boot. The horse reared and almost threw him. The Knight of Flowers saluted the king, rode to the far end of the list, and couched his lance ready. Sir Gregor brought his animal to the line, fighting with the reins, and suddenly it began. The mountain stallion broke into a hard gallop, plunging forward wildly, while the mare charged as smooth as a flow of silk. Sir Gregor wrenched his shield into position, juggling with his lance, and all the while fought to hold his unruly mount on a straight line, and suddenly Loras Tyrell was on him, placing the point of his lance just there, and in an eye-blink the mountain was falling. He was so huge that he took his horse down with him in a tangle of steel and flesh. Ned heard applause, cheers, whistles, shocked gasps, excited muttering, and over it all the rasping, raucous laughter of the hound. The Knight of Flowers reined up at the end of the list. His lance was not even broken. His sapphires winked in the sun as he raised his visor, smiling. The commons went mad for him. In the middle of the field, Sir Gregor Clegane disentangled himself and came boiling to his feet. He wrenched off his helm and slammed it down onto the ground. His face was dark with fury, and his hair fell down into his eyes. "My sword!" he shouted to his squire, and the boy ran it out to him. By then his stallion was back on his feet as well. Gregor Clegane killed the horse with a single blow of such ferocity that it half severed the animal's neck. Cheers turned to shrieks in a heartbeat. The stallion went down to its knees, screaming as it died. By then Gregor was striding down the lists towards Sir Loras Tyrell, his bloody sword clutched in his fist. "Stop him!" Ned shouted, but his words were lost in the roar. Everyone else was yelling as well, and Sansa was crying. It all happened so fast. The Knight of Flowers was shouting for his own sword, as Sir Gregor knocked his squire aside and made a grab for the reins of his horse. The mare scented blood and reared. Loras Tyrell kept his seat, but barely. Sir Gregor swung his sword, a savage two-handed blow that took the boy in the chest and knocked him from his saddle. The courser dashed away in panic, as Sir Loras lay stunned in the dirt. But as Gregor lifted his sword for the killing blow, a rasping voice warned, "Leave him be!" And a steel-clad hand wrenched him away from the boy. Lamontin pivoted in wordless fury, swinging his longsword in a killing arc with all his massive strength behind it, but the hound caught the blow and turned it, and for what seemed an eternity the two brothers stood hammering at each other as a dazed Loras Tyrell was helped to safety. Thrice Ned saw Sir Gregor aim savage blows at the hound's head helmet, yet not once did Sandor send a cut at his brother's unprotected face. It was the king's voice that put an end to it. The king's voice and 20 swords. John Aaron had told them that a commander needs a good battlefield voice, and Robert had proved the truth of that on the Trident. He used that voice now. "Stop this madness!" he boomed. "In the name of your king!" The hound went to one knee. Sir Gregor's blow cut air, and at last he came to his senses. He dropped his sword and glared at Robert, surrounded by his king's guard and a dozen other knights and guardsmen. Wordlessly, he turned and strode off, shoving past Barristan Selmy. "Let him go," Robert said, and as quickly as that, it was over. "Is the hound the champion now?" Sansa asked Ned. "No," he told her. "There will be one final joust between the hound and the Knight of Flowers." But Sansa had the right of it after all. A few moments later, Sir Loras Tyrell walked back onto the field in a simple linen doublet and said to Sandor Clegane, "I owe you my life. The day is yours, sir." "I'm no sir," the hound replied, but he took the victory and the champion's purse, and for perhaps the first time in his life, the love of the commons. They cheered him as he left the lists to return to his pavilion. As Ned walked with Sansa to the archery field, Littlefinger and Lord Renly and some of the others fell in with them. "Tyrell had to know the mare was in heat," Littlefinger was saying. "I swear the boy planned the whole thing. Gregor has always favoured huge, ill-tempered scallions with more spirit than sense." The notion seemed to amuse him. It did not amuse Sir Barristan Selmy. "There is small honour in tricks," the old man said stiffly. "Small honour and 20,000 golds, Lord Renly smiled. That afternoon, a boy named Angai, an unheralded commoner from the Dornish Marches, won the archery competition, outshooting Sir Balon Swan and Jalabar Zoe at 100 paces after all the other bowmen had been eliminated at the shorter distances. Ned sent Alan to see him out and offer him a position with the hands guard, but the boy was flush with wine and victory and riches undreamed of, and he refused. The melee went on for 3 hours. Nearly 40 men took part, free riders and hedge knights, new-made squires in search of a reputation. They fought with blunted weapons in a chaos of mud and blood, small troops fighting together and then turning on each other as alliances formed and fractured, until only one man was left standing. The victor was the Red Priest, Thoris of Myr, a madman who shaved his head and fought with a flaming sword. He had won melees before. The fire sword frightened the mounts of the other riders, and nothing frightened Thoris. The final tally was 3 broken limbs, a shattered collarbone, 12 smashed fingers, 2 horses that had to be put down, and more cuts, sprains, and bruises than anyone cared to count. Ned was desperately pleased that Robert had not taken part. That night, at the feast, Eddard Stark was more hopeful than he had been in a great while. Robert was in a high good humour, the Lannisters were nowhere to be seen, and even his daughters were behaving. Jorah brought Arya down to join them, and Sansa spoke to her sister pleasantly. "The tournament was magnificent," she sighed. "You should have come. How was your dancing?" "I'm sore all over," Arya reported happily, proudly displaying a huge purple bruise on her leg. "You must be a terrible dancer," Sansa said doubtfully. Later, while Sansa was off listening to a troupe of singers perform the complex round of interwoven ballads called the Dance of the Dragons, Ned inspected the bruise himself. "I hope Pharrell is not being too hard on you," he said. Arya stood on one leg. She was getting much better at that of late. "Sirio says that every hurt is a lesson, and every lesson makes you better.